So Maxim. You know why I brought you here, right?
Where am I? Take this hood off my head. I demand it.
Jeez.
I am Maxime LaPierre. I deserve a hearing, an in-person hearing.
You do realize that you hit Dan Boyle in the back, causing grievous injury, right? You do realize this.
Yes, I realize it.
You do realize the numbers are in the back. That's the part you're not supposed to hit.
What do you want from me, huh? You want an apology, huh?
Yes.
I will not apologize.
You will apologize.
I am not, you silly podcasting fodder.
We have means.
You are a pasty computer programmer.
What is this button do?
Oh, my nipples. My nipple hair is literally singed off.
That worked better than I thought it would. Okay, so now it's time for the apology I mentioned.
Okay. I am sorry.
Okay.
I am sorry. I am not sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. And next time you play the blues, I will hit your little precious Logan Couture.
It's more where that came from. It's time for the apology. Are you ready for a real apology now?
No.
Okay. I think I have a way to make you...
Oh!
And now...
Okay, I am sorry. I am a worthless turd. I am a little tiny speck of human dust waste. I am worthless. I am sorry.
That was satisfying.
Coming to you on some serious tape delay via podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, well, a lot has happened.
Yes.
Since we last recorded, when we had our double dose of dudes last week, we saw maybe the most frightening moment in recent Sharks history with one of the best defensemen in the NHL and one of the best players in San Jose Sharks history, Dan Boyle, going down to the ice, needing to be stretchered off. I'm sure anyone who's listening to this podcast saw that hit and... I was in shock. I couldn't believe it. And I knew that you were DVRing the game, and I called you.
Yeah, yeah.
And because I didn't know what to do. Like, I mean, I felt completely ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like, I'm standing there going, and he's not moving, and we're...
Yeah.
I called you. I was like, dude, I know you're not watching, but I was hoping to get you on the phone. I was like, you got to just turn it on right now. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I got a text from another friend of mine, and he said, your worst nightmare just happened. And I said, Boyle? And he said, on a stretcher.
Yep.
So, I mean, the only benefit is that it could be worse. It could have been a lot worse. You look at that hit. You look at the fact that he was immobile on the ice basically the entire time. I think he said, or it was reported, that he woke up when he was on the gurney being wheeled off. I mean, he was unconscious for... you know, a long time. I think somebody reported that they saw him shaking. Of course, we don't have any medical details. He could have suffered a seizure for all we know. That's not that uncommon.
Yeah, we don't know that.
We have no idea.
We have no idea what happened, and they're being very tight-lipped about it. And I think there's definitely, if we're looking for encouraging signs, he was texting the media, telling him he felt okay that next day. And they let him fly home, you know, 24 hours later, which if there had, again, pure speculation, if there had been something major, like I would think that they would not have let him go on the plane.
But, Major with like a brain or a neck injury, but say right. he got a broken jaw, which looking at the replay didn't seem that far out of the question.
Sure. Well, that's what I thought it would be for sure. But I don't understand if it's a broken jaw, why they haven't just said that yet.
Right.
You know, I would think that if that was that, we would know that by now. The shroud of secrecy makes me nervous, mm-hmm. you know. I'm not ready to push the panic button. Totally, we've gotten some emails that have pushed the panic button, dude. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Jim emails us. He says, Maxime LaPierre made the decision for Dan Boyle and the Sharks on whether or not he plays in San Jose next season or anywhere else. Jeff Merrick mentioned he had heard that Boyle's injury was more serious than first let on. And Pollock reported that McClellan, quote, didn't sound too encouraging when asked about Boyle. So we have no clue when he's coming back. A neck injury is bad for everyone. At Boyle's age, it could be the end of hockey. Do you dudes having some relationship have any info to soothe the minds of fans? No, we don't. I don't even really feel comfortable to try to exploit the few contacts that we do have to try and find out. This is a, you know, it's a private matter. I don't know, you know, if it's something minor, then I would like to think that maybe those people, if they're listening to this podcast, might come out and contact us with any information they might have. But it could be something really serious. And it could be, Dan Boyle and his family could be in a position where he's making a career decision, you know, a serious life decision about whether if this is something he even wants to continue. And I really don't want to get in the middle of that as some dumbass on a microphone. I mean, it's not really any of my business. I wish the team was more forthcoming, of course. We all do. I would like to know that at least he's not expected to serve any long-term health repercussions because of this. That would be nice, aside from the whole hockey part. But so anyway, Jim goes on and says, it also seems that Burns is now injured. With his style of play of forward, he's going to get banged up. Big power forwards like that like to bang bodies down low don't have a long shelf life in the NHL like Ryan Clough. Should he be put back on the blue line now that Boyle's return is questionable before the team has neither one as a number one defenseman? So, dude, I think actually it might have been Jim I responded to a tweet at some point saying that, you know, I'm still not 100% about Boyle's move to forward precisely because of things like this. Because you can see the difference, right? We've watched some games now without Boyle in the lineup. The difference with Boyle not on the power play quarterback or not bringing the puck up ice, not being that offensive threat from the blue line is palpable. It's really noticeable.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think that it hasn't been as noticeable an absence as I would have expected because the team still has been able to score. I mean, they scored quite a bit in Dallas. They scored a lot against Calgary at home. Nobody scored anything, you know, right. In the Detroit game. I don't know if Boyle would have made a difference in that game. I'm not saying we don't miss him. We miss him greatly. I mean, he's one of the best puck movers in the entire league, even at his age. But I wouldn't move Burns back. I gotta say at this point, dude, I'm kind of sold. Like I'm sold on Burns up front now. I'm sold on it. He's been so good with Joe. That top line's been very good, even though Hurdle's kind of come back down to reality a little bit. They're still very dangerous together. And I think you move him back, then you have a giant hole up front,
mm-hmm.
you know? So you're going to have a hole somewhere. I'm not worried about Burns' injury.
Dude, we have the answer to the hole up front, which we'll talk about in a minute. I know you know who I mean.
I know. I think Burns' injury, he took a puck in the mouth, right? And who knows, maybe he had some dental work done. Yeah. Again, pure speculation.
Probably needed like a root canal or something. I mean, these guys have so many dental problems.
From what I understood, he is going to play against Boston. I mean, that's what I got out of it.
Right.
He needed a game off. I don't think this is Burns is out for weeks. I think Burns mm-hmm. needed, you know, a game off. He maybe lost a couple teeth, had some dental work.
More than a couple.
Whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not that worried about it. No, I wouldn't want to see Burns move back. And I think, although there was a roster move yesterday that maybe makes this a little bit more complicated, the Sharks were at 49 contracts and now they're at 50. If, God forbid, the Boyle is out for the year,
mm-hmm.
I can't imagine a scenario where the Sharks don't replace him. with a trade. I just
wow.
I can't imagine that.
Those guys don't grow on trees, dude.
I know. Well, listen. I was telling somebody this, and you know, what wouldn't shock me is if they just go right out and bring back Brian Campbell. I mean,
no way.
I would say no way, dude. I mean, they're making basically the same money. And yeah, Campbell's has two more years on his deal, but Boyle's a better player. But if you're in a situation, we're getting way too far ahead of ourselves.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If Boyle was in a situation where he couldn't play and this was a Pronger situation, then I don't think Doug Wilson is going to sit there and go, ah, well, everything was coming together just right. My team in its prime, and I'm just going to like hand the keys to the car to Matt Tennyson. That's not going to happen. They're not going to do that.
I think they might.
No.
Because think of what you have to give up to get a guy like that. I mean,
I don't think you'd have to give up much, dude.
What, a team that needs to get to the...
A team that sucks. They're terrible.
But still, they have a valuable good player.
That's exactly...
They're still going to want young players.
They give up Brian Campbell, they'd be worse. They'd get the first pick for sure.
Right, but I mean, they're not going to want Patrick Marleau in return.
No.
They're going to want like young players and prospects, things that the Sharks are already thin on. I think that would be a terrible, terrible mistake.
I don't want it to come to that. I am, because this is a podcast and it's people want to hear us speculate. So I'm speculating. Well, I don't think the price tag on Brian Campbell would be that high at all. I think it would be
he's still among the leaders in defensive points every year.
I know, but Florida sucks.
They
dude.
Do suck.
They
but that
suck.
But that doesn't mean they're not going to be able to extract value.
I don't think it would take that much. You look at what it costs to, like, what Florida gave up to get him there.
Well, that's because Chicago was in a terrible cap situation. Florida is not in that
Florida's
situation.
Florida's in a terrible team situation.
They are in a terrible team situation, yeah. So they wouldn't be that interested in trading one of their best players, and if they were, they'd want to get good value in return.
I disagree. I think that they would give him away to save the money.
Win in Rome.
Agree to disagree. Anyways, at this point, there's no real news on Dan Boyle. I had heard that he was meeting with Doug Wilson today. What that means, I don't know. He has been placed on IR, so he would not be back for the short term. But, I mean, if he's best case scenario, I mean, you know, he could be back in a week or two. I mean, he could. It just depends on what the injury is, dude. I mean, some guys come back from concussions in a week or so. If that's what it is, I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
it's impossible to know.
Well, Matt has a peripheral question. We have got a lot of emails this week. Questions of Dudes on Hockey, of course, is the email address, and we always appreciate your emails. May not get to all of them this week, but some we might be banking for future shows because we have a lot to cover this week. Matt says, little bit of GM rosturbation, but here's the question. What will eventually happen to players who are on an LTIR but who will never play again? Like Pronger, Mark Savard. With Paul Holmgren all but officially announcing Pronger's retirement, my buddy and I have been wondering. An argument could be made for cap circumvention given that Pronger on LTIR, the Flyers get the cap benefit and can bank against it. If Pronger actually officially retired, all of his contract would come back and count against the cap. Also, players like Pronger will continue to take a contract spart against the 50 allowed. Will these players actually be on the payroll till 2016-2017 in Pronger's case, even though he hasn't played since 2011? Could a case of cap circumvention be made? Shouldn't these teams at some point eat the full contract and not get away with stashing a player who has been on LTIR for nearly 5 years? Thoughts and concerns? And also, he wants to know the amount of money we would be willing to put into a death fund for LaPierre. That guy has to live with himself. That's enough of a punishment as far as I'm concerned. So about Pronger and Savard and these guys, what do you think, dude? Is this like cap circumvention or what? Or is this just bad luck?
Is it cap circumvention? Yes. Does it bother me? No. I mean, like what? I feel like this is a different situation than like banishing Wade Redden for like signing a contract and the guy ends up being terrible.
Right.
Like that you should have to live with. Pronger and Savard had career ending injuries.
Right.
So that team has to be penalized for a guy who, it's not like he can't play like he's no good. He literally can't play like he can't play. God forbid, what if it happens if the Sharks are in that situation with Havlat?
Right.
Or Boyle.
Mm-hmm.
so then that happens to us? Like, then the Sharks are penalized?
Because these guys got hurt.
Because these guys got hurt, and they literally can't play ever again. And I mean, we're not saying that's the case, everybody.
We don't know.
We have no idea. We really don't know. But in the case of Philly and Boston, it doesn't bug me. Like, so a team is penalized for having a guy with a career-ending injury? It's because the NHL has guaranteed contracts. If it was the NFL, they just would get released,
right? Yeah, they just release him.
So,
and I think about it from the player side. So if Pronger retires, he doesn't get paid if he retires. So nobody wins in that case. If he retires, he doesn't get paid, and the cap goes against Philly, and Philly takes the hit for it, and Pronger got hurt and has to leave the league, and he no longer gets a paycheck. Of course, he's getting a paycheck in whatever other role, head of scouting, whatever BS role they created for him. But the fact is, it's like, you're right. They do have player contracts. It's collectively bargained. These guys get hurt. They face, you know, terrible risks on the ice, and they can get, you know, brutally injured in these cases. I wouldn't want to deny those players the contracts that they've negotiated in good faith. I want those guys to get paid. Lord knows that the average like career length in the NHL is short enough already. Do we really want to sort of take extra? I mean, Savard and Pronger obviously aren't going to be, you know, buying, you know, beans in a can anytime soon. It's not like they're sort of like literal.
I'm sitting at home in front of the fire.
Yeah, Chris Bartz.
I can't feed my family, my snifter of amaretto.
But think about some of these other guys. I mean, you know, think about a guy who signs. I mean, he hasn't been great for the Sharks, but think about a guy like Adam Burrish. Like, what if Adam Burrish could never play again? The guy's making $1 million a year. This is probably going to be his peak contract in his career. He's not going to be allowed to collect it. I'm not saying whether or not he deserves it, but he negotiated that contract in good faith. Yeah. What if this back issue is so bad he can never play again? So the Sharks get penalized and he doesn't get any money? That seems terribly unfair.
I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it. I think that it's...
If there were shenanigans going on with doctors, artificially putting people on LTIR, something like that, that's a problem.
That's different.
But no one's actually disputing the fact that these guys are not in a position to be able to play the game.
It's different between a situation where a player is not good, like a Redden situation or a Jeff Finger situation, and a player is like physically not able to perform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Completely different. Okay, dude, we got so many more emails. I don't know if we're going to...
Yeah, let's do it.
Keep going?
Yeah. Okay.
We got some... we got two emails about the Stars.
Oh.
This is the exciting part of the podcast, everyone. Noah's here. Undoubtedly one of the most shocking, disgusting emails I will draft in my lifetime. Dare I say it? I think the Sharks have gone from favorite pretenders to legitimate cup contenders in my mind. Actually, no, this is a great email. So
yeah, keep going.
I've never bought in on their teams in past seasons. They look different this season. Their fake 7-0 start last year. My bold prediction, Sharks will make the Stanley Cup finals this season. I refuse to ever acknowledge that they can or will ever win the cup, so that will have to suffice. And since I'm throwing out bold predictions, I might as well throw out another. The Stars will beat the Sharks and ruin their perfect record this Thursday.
Ooh.
Came true.
Nostra Noah.
All logic and statistical reasoning thrown out the window here.
Wait, hold on. Noah sent this on Friday.
He said 4-2, but he was very close.
Yeah.
Anyway, he actually liked something that Jumbo did with regards to his comments about Hurdle. Hats off to you, sir. Well said. Go Stars. Well, Noah, I you're 2-for-2 on this email as far as I'm concerned. I would love to believe that the Sharks are going to make it to Stanley Cup Finals. I you know, Doug and I have this conversation every week about whether this is real or this is not real. And certainly the Stars managed to win in the shootout, a thing that the Sharks have traditionally not been that great at, but... The Sharks are still haven't lost in regulation. So
yeah, I gotta say that Stars loss, it didn't bother me. Like it didn't bother me.
Yeah.
It was the first game after Boyle's injury. I thought they played pretty well. It wasn't perfect. You know, there were some weird things that kind of happened.
Yeah.
And
the Stars, you know,
the Stars played well.
And they're better than, you know, they're on a track that's much better than what they were. You know, we gave them a lot of crap last year, the year before, stocking up on the Jagr and Ray Whitney crowd. And now they have sort of a younger core. They got this young defenseman, Dylan, who's pretty damn good. Goligoski's back there.
Goligoski's a -10 this year.
Yeah.
Oof.
Ufa.
Ufa. He's on waivers in the Fantasy Hockey League that terrible in.
That were terrible. But, you know, Dallas has got some things to be excited about, too. So they're not like a ridiculously bad team. I mean, they have a team that can hurt people.
Yeah, that's a tough place to go in and win. Sharks have always kind of had problems there. And we had a scout in the house. Yep. Bree
was here.
Tell us what you thought, Bree.
Few thoughts on the Sharks-Stars game. Jumbo going after Ben in 30 seconds leading up to the Sagan goal only helped that puck go in, and you could see it on Jumbo's face immediately. Nice small breakaway and goal by Nieto. Two juicy rebounds by Niemi leading to easy tap in the wide-open net goals. Eric Cole and Pickles in the third period going at each other was fun to watch. Didn't see Cole after that. Agree with your points that Hannah, while not an offensive dynamo, engages in offensive zone play while still being defensively responsible. And way too many Sharknado clips. I think that that's right all the way around. You know, that they're a... That's the one thing about Niemi I've seen in some of these goals is, you know, his rebound control is always not, I wouldn't say terribly suspect, but that seems to be the part of his game that seems to go before the others. And he gave up some fat rebounds, obviously, in that game that turned into goals. He gave up some fat rebounds in the Calgary game that turned into goals. So, you know, you're a little unsure about some of that stuff, but, you know, he managed to tighten it up, and it's hard to bitch about a guy who's Vezina finalist and winning a lot of games.
He was incredible last night. I mean, and everyone easily talk about that last save against Bertuzzi.
Yeah, that was amazing.
I think the save was great, but Bertuzzi's reaction was even better.
Yeah,
he sort of looked up at the sky and said, "Con! No! Why me?
Con!"
That's karma. Yeah. That's karma. Bertuzzi coming back. Good to hear from you, Bree, and thanks for the scouting report, dude. We've got more.
Peter from Bulgaria.
This is awesome.
He followed us all the way back since someone's dropped the word for us on the old Chomp board, which is no longer in service. But he's followed the Sharks whenever possible since 95. Here's the big surprise for me. Usually you're quite unbiased and knowledgeable about the majority of NHL teams, but I don't know the reason why anytime you say the Ducks are going to suck this season, they go on an impressive run while playing relatively entertaining hockey, despite your general predictions. I keep wondering if that's just a byproduct of the animosity between the Sharks and Ducks fans, blurring your view of their team and organization, or the Ducks organization is applying motivational tools unused by the rest of NHL teams, causing this team on the ice to overachieve on almost any game day. First line is all-star. Second one's pretty solid. Third line is almost as good as the Sharks. And as a fourth line, I think he mentioned in a separate email right now is like Edom, Palmieri, and Bonino, who is ex-Shark. Anyway, what do you think about this critique, dude? Are we hopelessly biased against the Ducks because we hate the Ducks? Which is, well, the second part certainly is true. We do hate the Ducks. And what... How do you answer this? The Ducks are second only to the Sharks in the Pacific Division at the moment. They have the same amount of points as Chicago. How do we reconcile these two things, dude?
Well, there's no denying the Ducks are off to a good start. I mean, like, I can't dispute that. I think if you want to stack the Sharks up against the Ducks, I mean, the Sharks definitely have more signature wins. I mean, they've played some of the same teams. The Ducks have beat some of those teams, like Calgary and Phoenix, by a goal. They beat Minnesota by a goal. I mean, the Sharks beat both those teams by multiple goals. Both teams beat the New York Rangers very badly. The Sharks went to Detroit without Dan Boyle and Brent Burns and won. Like, I think that is, although Detroit's missing some players as well, that's a pretty great signature win, you know, if you look at that. And I look at what the Ducks have done. I don't see that signature win. I think they could have got it today in Toronto. That's not an easy place to go and win.
Mm-hmm.
And Toronto beat them. So if the Ducks can win in Montreal in two nights, I might have a little bit more faith that they're better than that. But, you know, I'm looking at the stats you've pulled up. I mean, Victor Foss appears to completely come back to reality after, you know, his great start. I mean, he's 2-1, but he's a 3.33, 877 save percentage. And I don't love some of their older players. Like, I think Saku Koivu's not as good as advertised. They have Dustin Penner. Like, that's... you can't count on Dustin Penner to be productive. And that's a big subtraction to lose Sheldon Surrey. I think that that's going to hurt them. So, yeah, I do think our friend from Bulgaria, I think that the Ducks start is a little bit of a mirage. I think it's a little bit of a mirage. They are not terrible, but I do not think that they are a 7-2 team. I don't think they're that good.
Yeah,
dude.
I agree with you. I look at their second line. Solani continues to score at a rate that is jaw-dropping for a guy of his vintage, let's put it that way. I'm not, you know, Saku Koivu, I don't think is as effective as he used to be. Silverberg's a young and upcoming player that they got in the Bobby Ryan trade, so he's pretty good. But you Daniel Winnick's a guy I like defensively, but do you really want to put the third line of the Ducks up against Pavelski right now? That's not a contest, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Tommy Wingles is playing pretty well. You know, if we had a full lineup, we would have another good offensive punch there. I think that the Sharks and maybe the fourth line with Edom and Palmieri as young and upcoming players is certainly an upgrade over fourth line. But generally, that fourth line is not the difference between, you know, a great team in over 82 games and, you know, a terrible team over 82 games.
So, I don't think the Ducks' fourth line has an answer for Mike Brown.
Okay, let's talk about Mike Brown now. The Sharks traded for Mike Brown, which made me laugh. Because I don't really understand why the Sharks need Mike Brown. But, dude,
well,
play devil's advocate. Tell me why the Sharks need Mike Brown.
Well, obviously the coaching staff looked at what James McCarthy did in the last night and decided they'd rather have Mike Brown.
It's John McCarthy.
Even better. John McCarthy. Yeah. I don't even know his
name. You don't even know his name.
And Mike Brown is Jewish, so perhaps they felt like they needed to celebrate the holidays a little bit more well-rounded in the dressing room.
There you go. Okay.
One of only a few Jewish players in the NHL. I bet you didn't know that.
I did not know that. It's right here on Wikipedia.
We always talk about when we trade for a player, we always go look and see what opposing teams' blogs have to say about them. Mm-hmm. And every Edmonton thing I wrote was like, thank Jesus God he's gone.
I know.
You know? And then I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not, that's not what you want to see. It's hard to make a case for it, dude. I mean, the Sharks have been without Burrish and Burrish being out basically for the year. They clearly are not happy with Pelech and McCarthy and Freddie Hamilton holding down that winger role with Desjardins and Shepherd. They weren't happy with it. Mm-hmm. So they feel they need to have a physical presence. I mean, Mike Brown is a established middleweight
right.
in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug Wilson has a tendency to be interested in these kind of players. I mean, we've seen him trade for heavyweights. We've seen him sign heavyweights and middleweights. I mean, every year we seem to have somebody like this, you know, on the team.
Jesus.
And
his Corsi numbers are so bad.
Yeah. I mean,
everything about him is bad. I was hoping, like, oh, he doesn't score a lot, but his possession numbers aren't that bad. No, his possession numbers are awful. Awful.
The thing that will be interesting is, and I thought one blog gave him a little bit of a discount on this, and it might have been Fear the Finn saying that Brown was not that bad when he played with the Ducks statistically.
Okay.
And I remember him on the Ducks actually, and I remember him being a pain in the ass, you know, just really not fun to play against.
That was like 2009, 2010.
I know, dude. After that, he played on Toronto and Edmonton. He played for two pretty crappy teams. And Toronto was bad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When he was there. And Edmonton was bad last year. So is this a fourth liner playing with two other fourth liners on a bad bottom third of the NHL team who he doesn't have any help? Is he going to be better playing with Desjardins and Shepherd? Is that going to be better playing on a good team? Are we going to see a guy?
Here's the good news. Given his numbers last year, he really couldn't be much worse.
I'm digging, dude. I'm digging. I'm trying to find a reason. You know, clearly Doug Wilson likes him. He even made a comment about how they've been trying to get him for like a year and a half, which means they were trying to get him last year and they didn't pay the price.
What's even more surprising than the fact that we were trying to get him for a year and a half is that the Oilers wouldn't give him up until now.
He has a great mustache. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
He has a great mustache. Yeah. Sharks are mustache deficient.
Is it like a Ulysses S. Grant
style
mustache?
Yeah, it's good. It's classic. Dude. Okay. It's classic mustache.
Well, QWERTY, we answered your question, which is, who is he and why should I care?
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt. And you know what? Mike Brown's going to fight in Boston. It's going
to
happen.
Yeah, because you got to prove yourself on a new team.
He's going to fight.
I am never excited by having a player on the roster that, by all rights, should play 3 to 4 minutes a night. That, to me, is a waste. I don't want to see any players on the roster that, if they're out there more than 4 minutes, you're like, uh-oh, you know, you know, you're hoping nothing bad happens. That's not who I want on an NHL roster.
So is Doug Wilson a liar or a bad evaluator of talent? Because he said that Mike Brown is fast. He said Mike Brown plays a good north-south game. He's a good hockey player, and they've wanted on this team for a year and a half. So is he a moron all of a sudden?
I guess we're going to find out.
Because, I mean,
everybody
didn't exactly just say, like, you know, I can't remember when they traded for Jody Shelley what he said, but I don't think he said that.
Yeah, pretty sure.
You know, I doubt he, you know, maybe he said something about if you're on a desert island, he would definitely take the can of beans.
One of the great moments in Sharks history as far as I'm concerned.
Let's see. You know, he's going to play. He'll play a whopping 4 minutes probably. And they obviously didn't like what they were getting out of the other guys. So they're going to go with Mike Brown, and
I'm going to do my level best to approach this situation with an open mind. Although I admit it's going to be difficult. You look at a guy who hadn't scored 10 points in a season ever. I don't think maybe once. It's hard to believe that he can be a contributor to a team, as a self-professed Stars fan said, will be in the Stanley Cup Finals. You know, which player on Boston or Chicago played 3 minutes a night and was good for 8 points over the course of the season?
Yeah,
I can't name it.
That's a good point, dude. I mean, that has been a flaw in the Sharks lineup in the playoffs. When they've had those kind of players, they haven't trusted them, and they end up playing someone random in that spot that hasn't been playing regularly during the year. Mike Brown's not here to play in April and May.
Right.
He's here to make sure that
these guys are protected.
That if anybody runs Dan Boyle, that there's going to be an answer, you know? And
I mean, Desjardins did his level best.
He did, but Desjardins was the one who was on the ice, you know? But you don't want to ask Burns to do that. You don't want to put that on Joe. Mm-hmm. You don't want to put that on Tommy Wingles, who's actually playing the best hockey we've seen him play in his San Jose career. Those guys will. They're team players, right? You don't want to ask Brad Stewart to do that. You want to ask Mike Brown to do it, because if he gets 17 penalty minutes, they won't care.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. So maybe that's the reasoning. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of.
The only thing that I could stomach is if they play him a little bit like Pelech, which is he sits some games, they play a team that's pretty physical, and that might have... You know, but if they play him every night on the fourth line, I'm not going to be happy.
I don't think that's going to be the case, dude. I think it's going to be that roster carousel that we've seen, the Worcester Shuttle.
Yeah.
Where, you know, when they're playing a skilled team, like when they're playing Detroit, we'll see Freddie Hamilton.
What's he making anyway?
He's making like $700,000.
Okay, so we could actually send him down and not take the cap hit, because the $1 million mark is the place where you can't.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, you could do that. I don't think that that's the plan.
No.
You know, I think he's going to play against Boston.
Yeah, sure.
And he's going to play against Vancouver and those kind of teams.
Yep.
The teams that they were suiting up Pelech, and the ones that they weren't, then we'll see somebody else.
Well, dude, the Sharks keep rolling on. They're a little banged up at this point, but they're still winning some games. They're going on a big road trip. Anything to watch out for in the coming week?
I'm curious to see how the Boston game goes. You know, I have kind of low expectations based on second game of a road trip, coming off kind of an exhausting effort in Detroit where maybe they weren't at their best, but it was not maybe the most exciting game to watch, but it was a kind of a hard fought battle,
sure, you know.
Boston's very physical, you know, Sharks missing Boyle. Who knows if Burns is going to play? I'm assuming he will. You know, I think that's going to be a good measuring stick. You know, I certainly consider Boston to be
the class of the East amongst amongst the very top.
They can be the best team in the NHL. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know if they are right now, you know, how they're playing, but they're damn good. So how the Sharks play against them, it'll be interesting. And then after that, they go to Matt D'Agostini.
Somebody didn't do their homework.
You have failed me.
Oops. Dead air, dead air. Let's see. Clicky, click, click. I don't even know. Bruins.
I know.
Here we go. Bruins, Canadiens, Senators, Kings.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, that's a tough road trip. Canadiens and Senators back to back. I mean,
Kings,
looking at
Oaks.
That, I mean, separating the Kings from that, because basically the Sharks will come home probably before they go to L.A. What would be acceptable for you from these next three games? What result?
I mean, Senators, we can beat. Canadiens, I mean, two wins would be great. Two wins would be great.
I'm going to say 3 points. I'd be happy with 3 points. Yeah. I really would. Like, I think if they can go and get... If they can get a point in Boston tomorrow, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
I really will. And I'm not just saying we're not good enough to beat them. I think we can beat them. But you know, that's a tough game. I mean, that's a real tough game. So in a long road trip, if the Sharks can go in there and get a point, I think that's good. And then if you can get a win in Montreal or Ottawa, then that's a good road trip. You look at that, you go, yeah, okay, we got 7 out of 8 points. Pretty damn good.
All right, dude. I think that's good. I think we're... We've answered most, if not all, of the emails. I think we've tidied up all the outstanding issues, and we are now ready for another week of Sharks hockey.
All right, dude. No more injuries. And
please,
please, Mr. Boyle, come back soon.
Get better soon.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.